gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, baby, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Hey, kids, I have Carbonite Online Backup. It's a must for my computer. Should be for yours, too. Carbonite automatically backs up files on your Mac or PC. Whenever you're connected to the Internet, go to Carbonite.com. Enter Stephanie for my special 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription. Carbonite.com. Offer code Stephanie. Do it. Do it now. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Warder, me, Stephanie Miller. Hal Sparks is, he is in the green room at The View where it's Man Week. It's,
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay.
He's hosting with other men.
That's right.
Exactly. Let's go say hello. Good morning, Hal Sparks.
Hi. Yes, it's about time, don't you think, that the men took over The View? Because I don't think men have enough programming on television. I think, you know, it's about time that we really got to, you know, pee in the corners of The View.
Thank God the downtrodden plight of the white man in America is finally going to be addressed today.
It's getting so horrible that, you know, I was like, where do we have shows other than all the major networks?
So you're co-hosting with Joe Scarborough?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
It's myself and Joe and Sherry and Elizabeth. Should be an adventure.
Delightful. And what's the mood there now? Is there any pre-show squabbling going on?
No. It's, I would like to, introduce everybody to some sort of backdoor, input into The View where you find out that they're really just at each other's throats all the time. But quite frankly, like all these shows, it's just making the donuts, you know, that's all they do.
It's a job.
And make the donuts. It's, you know what it reminds me of, especially, like, I've done, you know, Fox's Red Eye a couple of times, and for all the hate and vitriol that they spend, you know, they spill on the airwaves, behind the scenes, it's a lot like the old Sheepdog and Wile E. Coyote in the old Warner Brothers cartoon, where they just check out.
They just clock in, yeah.
Yeah, they just try to kill each other the whole time, and then go, see you tomorrow, Dave, you know.
So when you go to commercial break, then it's just, and scene. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know I'm probably not shocking any of your listeners that there's not a consistent thread of ethical standard that goes through. But I mean, this is The View. So, I mean, most of what we're going to be talking about is man sex. So.
Yes. Good. Good.
Yeah. Now, how awful men are and why we sleep with women. The women that sleep with us never come into play, unless they're prettier than the perceived woman on the panel, in which case she's a hoe.
Mm. Well, and you will have to espouse your Hal Sparks philosophy that you have espoused on the Stephanie Miller Show that you have said before. How will you know when you found
if you found the one?
Try all of them?
Exactly.
Yes.
Uh-huh. I will make precisely that point today as we discuss National Enquirer's allegations that Al Gore tried to fondle a masseuse in a hotel here in New York City.
Yes, we were just about to get to that. Did you see this breaking news? I'm apparently asking for a happy ending or something, and sounds fishy, doesn't it, this story?
Yeah, it sounds absurd is what it sounds. Like, essentially, she says that she started doing his abdomen, he started moaning, and then he told her to go lower, and when she wouldn't, he grabbed her hand and put it there, which sounds so Al Gore.
I just wanted her to speak with a lower voice.
Right.
I just said, lower your pitch. You're just a little too screechy.
You're right.
It was misinterpreted wildly.
Ruining my massage because you just sound so squealy. Tinny is the word.
Well, I mean, interesting that in initial reports, it sounds like, you know, this was sort of reported and not even, you know, the police didn't even follow up because there seemed to be no evidence of any kind. A newspaper there, it was 2 years ago, I guess, declined to report it.
Yeah, it's goofy. It's one of those things that's just clearly and they're floating it now because he's getting a divorce. So that's what pushed it to the surface. Maybe this was it. Maybe she divorced him because of this. Maybe it's because he gets massages all the time. What's the story?
They're trying to give him the John Edwards treatment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And there's nothing there.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be this lame. You know, they're going to do a tennis serve with a badminton shuttlecock, and it's just going to be dude.
Yeah. I don't know why. It's one of those doesn't pass the smell test. You're like John Edwards. You're like, yeah, okay, yeah, I can see yeah, that. Yeah, yeah. Al Gore. I'm like, no, I don't think so.
They're saying, in essence, look how lucky we are that the Supreme Court elected our president in 2000.
Oh, totally.
Yes, because Al Gore's a maniac. Yeah.
Seriously. Can you imagine him unleashed? He's like Clinton on steroids now. He's, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you had to see me like this. Outraged.
Periscope up.
Hal Sparks, I have sorely missed your happy clappy liberalness on the show because
I know.
I've been dealing with the naysaying mooks now for.
I know. I've heard that nothing but sad reports from the Twitterverse about about their panic attacks.
Oh come on! All we do is just clock in, fight, and then clock back out.
Right.
Again.
I know. That's what I mean. If it was based on principle, I kind of wouldn't mind. Yay! Okay, whose side is it today? You take that side, I'll take the other one. Okay, there we go. And scene.
That's right. What they do on Red Eye.
Right, totally. Like
Morning, Sam.
Yeah, right. Except for the fact that their main producer he has to be suicidal, if not the most depressed person I've ever seen in my life. And so he's just dead inside. So I think that's where the overall tone comes from at Fox, is that there's like this veneer of guys. It's lovely being in New York, and as you knew while you were here, Steph, that you, if you get over to the Fox studios especially, there's this veneer of dread that it actually is like a film between like the Roger Ailes zone of things and just above the anchor's heads, which is most stories as well. But they, you know, they just don't. It's just like, why bother? The end's coming anyways. Who cares? Like, it's amazing.
Well, let's get your take on the oil spill, because I know as a comic book aficionado, you're also shocked, like the right wing is, that the president is not Aquaman.
Right, hasn't flown down.
Yes.
You know, I keep expecting him to scream no and then fly to the atmosphere and reverse the polarity of the Earth and fly back through time. And
I did that already.
Car.
I got that covered. I did.
Yeah. here's the thing. I mean, and Jim and I talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, but the relief well is the only real option. The change now that has to happen, and this will be in their new set of rules, is two relief wells. End of story. Any deep water drilling, any even like medium depth, anything that they don't have absolute 100% certainty, like the other 3,000 rigs that are out there, if they're going into any deep water, any kind of explorative, they're going to have two other relief wells pre-dug.
Right.
Period.
Yeah, that's what apparently Al Gore was looking for as well, was a relief well of some sort.
That's what I meant. She misinterpreted what I was saying. I was talking about oil exploration.
I was on my cell phone getting a rub down.
Good heavens.
And I was talking to Hayward, and he was saying, you know, they just need to get the remote to go lower. Just go lower.
Hal Sparks, the General McChrystal firing, your take on all that and Petraeus coming in.
Quite frankly, I was not a fan of his during the Pat Tillman thing.
Yeah.
So, good riddance to bad rubbish as far as I'm concerned. Bringing Petraeus in, I see what they're doing with it. It's a smart political move. I think ultimately the only thing that would make everybody generally happy is to find the one guy in the military who goes, okay, we're out tomorrow. But that's not going to happen. And with Petraeus, you at least can, Petraeus was on board. He created the counterinsurgency policy that McChrystal was implementing. He was the actual one of the authors of how they do it. So it's a good choice for how to run it without the kind of bravado-y Rambo BS that McChrystal would do, which was, I'm going to show up and go on point with these guys. Well, you don't do that when you run everything. You have to stay in the back and run everything. Don't if you get your head shot off, we have to go through this all again. There's a reason why generals stay in the back, and it's not all just ego and fear. So
right.
I think Petraeus, what they'll try to do is kind of use the surge in Iraq element of that to reinforce the surge in Afghanistan. They're not going to send any more troops or whatever, but they're going to tighten the timetable. And the reason he didn't do Petraeus in the first place was because the timetable was too loose for Obama. You know, Petraeus was like, well, we could probably do this. And Obama was like, no, get in, get out. And it was interesting that he went and spoke to Colin Powell about the McChrystal firing before he did it. And I think this has, if you look at what Obama's doing in a lot of ways, he's trying to do like a heightened, smarter, you know, tighter version of the Powell doctrine insofar as this, you know, and it's just, and everybody's fighting him on it the same way, quite frankly, that they fought Colin Powell under the Bush administration. You know, Powell was supposed to do what he was told and not, you know, and just say, toe the party line or whatever, even though he had, you know, a better idea. And eventually that's what forced him out, essentially.
Yep. Yep. Hal Sparks, yeah. I am flying home to Los Angeles later with my broken fifth metatarsal, but I will be at your DVD release party for Charmageddon.
Yay!
Hal Sparks' fabulous new comedy special.
Yay! Yes.
And funny. Where you will rub my broken metatarsal and sand my corns.
No question. I will. Mm-hmm. I'll bring acupuncture needles. It'll be you stream your healing. It'll be a good time.
Yeah.
that's Hal Sparks' motto. What's the point of doing it if it's not on Ustream?
Exactly. It's like,
it if it's not being broadcast somewhere?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I live my life in the wide open. That way, when I do stuff that's secret, it's really, really secret.
Exactly.
Instead of moderate secrecy. Don't Who needs that?
All right, honey bun, I'm going to run. I will see you. I will see you back in L.A.
Absolutely. Yeah.
See you next.
And then I'm in for you all next week.
Oh, that's right. Hal Sparks filling us in for us all next week when we're on vacation. Enjoy, won't you?
Yeah.
It's Mama's little gift to you.
Exactly. So it'll be the first time ever that I filled in for you and seen you at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't get the memo, by the way, of getting the sucky fill-in host so I look better. I get people that are better than me, so I am in danger of losing my job.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I love you.
I adore you. You're awesome. And I'll see you see you guys on Monday.
All right, honey. See you Monday.
Yay, bye.
There he goes. There he goes. Hal Sparks off to co-host The View on Man Week. I wonder if they're doing a cup check before they go on set.
Probably.
All right. 18 minutes after the hour, back with the president of Pet Airways, where my doggies are about to fly. They're passengers, you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Also, Richard Engel reporting for us live from Afghanistan, coming up just in a few minutes on The Stephanie Miller Show.
You'll cheer, you'll cry, you might even get a cheap laugh or two.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Nasty dog.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. It's dog flying day, 24 minutes after the hour, 1-800. All right. Alyssa Binder, my buddy, my pal, the president and founder of Pet Airways, joins us now. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. Chris, my producer, says you have a surprise for me. What's the surprise?
Yes, I do. I'm going to get to see you this evening.
You are?
I flew into New York, so I get to see you and Fred.
Oh, yay. Okay, fabulous. So Fred is flying on Pet Airways, where he will be a passenger. Get it, everybody? and then Max is going in a week. On July 1st, and I have to tell you, you are so good with me because I bet you deal with a lot of hysterical pet parents.
We're all crazy.
Yeah, but I was freaking out we couldn't get them on the same flight, but you guys really, you know, you really do put the pets first, and I appreciate that. You guys were so nice and, you know, accommodating, because Max is actually bigger than the plane, I think, isn't he?
He's pretty large.
But anyway, I have to tell you, I really, really believe in your service. We were talking, you probably saw this horrible story a couple of weeks ago. John Travolta's dogs got killed at an airport.
Yeah.
Some, you know, airport employee was walking them and they were run over by a service truck or something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's just one of the, that's the reason for you guys, right? I mean, it's one of the many, many horror stories, unfortunately, you hear about trying to fly pets, particularly commercially, right?
That's correct. That's correct. And it's really because we are pet lovers and we really care about their safety and then loving them and making sure that they're safe. That's really, really the most important thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, and you can tell even when you take when I'm taken, you know, they only flew here 7 months ago. But when I dealt with you guys before, you can tell that the people really, really love dogs that, that are taking care of them because everybody, you know, it's stressful. Traveling's stressful for everybody, right?
Oh, I did it last night. Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm telling you, when I researched it, I thought you don't even want to mention some of the stuff, but it's like, you know, they fly cargo, first of all, if they go commercial, and they can forget to pressurize properly, heat or air condition properly. It's dark in there. It's unbelievably loud. You know, dogs get traumatized, right, even if nothing physically happens to them, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's, I mean, just in fact that it's dark and loud. Imagine if you were in a can and it's dark and loud. Not to mention about, you know, the pressure, the temperature, so on and so forth. And how about just sitting out on the tarmac waiting? I mean, when you're sitting in a plane and it's warm, imagine what it's like out on the tarmac when they're being loaded.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I have to tell you, the last time I moved back from New York to L.A., I actually rented a giant RV and hired a friend's brother to drive me and my three giant dogs across the country. And let me just say, that was a nightmare. It was like being in a giant inside a giant vibrator for 5 days. I had a headache. My dogs lost seriously like 10 pounds apiece. They had thyroid, you know, issues from stress. I mean, because it's a long way, a lot of these trips. That's also stressful for dogs, right?
Absolutely. You know, car sickness and so on. But, I mean, we'd rather see them in a car than in being put in cargo holds. So that's why we have Pet Airways where they can fly in the main cabin, where it's, you know, well-lit, climate-controlled, and there's a pet attendant taking care of them at all times.
And do they get drinks and snacks? What does the and the pet attendant is a human? I take it not.
It is a human, generally most of them are vet technicians. If not, they're all pet professionals, so
right.
They can administer medication if necessary. Give them water. We really do not feed any of the pets on the plane because we don't want them to get sick. So again, it's all about their safety, care, and comfort. And those are our three main points, and we stick to it. So number one is safety.
Listen, everybody in the off-leash area of Central Park knows about Pet Airways. Let me just tell
you. Bless you.
I proselytize for Pet Airways everywhere I go. But yeah, I mean, that's the great thing is that they fly in the main cabin. You don't fly with them. You know, people fly separately. But, you know, you guys, like, stop overnight. You feed them. You walk them. You know, and it just, it's so much. It's already so stressful moving for people. So, I mean, it's such a relief, I know, for pet parents to not have to stress about their pets' travel.
Which is, I mean, it's really nice. I mean, you're a pet parent. You know, you've already experienced our service and me being a crazy pet parent. But, you know, when you love your animals as much as we all do, we want to take care of them and make sure that they're happy and that they're safe. And when we're, you know, especially relocating, we're calmer and we want to make this as stress-free as possible. So.
Yeah, and I don't know if I told you, I broke my foot a couple of days ago. So tell you what, I'm like up to here with stress. So thank God Max and Fred are going to be well taken care of. I will see you. It's petairways.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Check it out. Doing the Lord's work. I will see you at the airport here in New York later.
I
with
look
Fred.
Forward to it. Great.
All right. Thank you, Alyssa. Alyssa Binder, CEO.
Thank you.
Pet Airways, 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
California, here I come. Right back where I started from.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour, the president yesterday on General McChrystal.
The conduct represented in the recently published article does not meet the standard that should be set by a commanding general.
Wow. Check me out. Aren't I fancy? I am going live now to Richard Engel, a reporter extraordinaire from MSNBC who is in Kabul, Afghanistan. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks so much for coming on. I really, really enjoy your work.
I appreciate that. It's a pleasure.
Well, Richard, obviously, you know, big news over there and here with this whole General McChrystal situation and the Petraeus being the replacement. What is the feeling over there? I know yesterday Karzai had said that he was a McChrystal supporter, correct?
Karzai is a McChrystal supporter, and Karzai's spokesman is now making the media rounds, actually right as we speak, and he is telling people, we will accept whoever the U.S. Decides to send over here, we will support the process, we appreciate President Obama's decision. So Karzai is getting on board, but he certainly was a McChrystal fan. He liked McChrystal because McChrystal empowered him. McChrystal wanted Karzai to take a more senior position, to assume leadership, and Karzai felt some of the previous commanders here were taking a more authoritarian approach and bullying him, and that wasn't McChrystal's style.
How do you feel Karzai is going to be able to work with Petraeus?
It'll be fine. He knows Petraeus. He knows Petraeus is a serious, serious player, that he has direct access to President Obama, that he has very significant relationships across the region. Karzai will take him seriously.
Richard, as a reporter who obviously covers Afghanistan, what was your take on this whole McChrystal situation, and did the president make the right decision, in your opinion?
Obviously people are sad when you see someone's career destroyed so quickly because of a bad article and a lapse in judgment on his behalf. And this was a bad article about him, and there was clearly a lapse of judgment that took place in allowing himself to make these kind of comments, especially in front of the presence of a reporter who was, you know, very obviously there with a tape recorder in hand making notebooks. So from everyone that I've spoken to, including individuals here on the ground, they think he had compromised his position so much and had to go. And it's unfortunate when you see someone who's worked so hard had to go, but mm-hmm. the feeling among a lot of people who know him was that it was time. It was time for him to go.
Richard, as a reporter that covers war, I mean, I do have to ask, what was he thinking? I mean, I was reading reports, I don't know if you saw those, that there was even more said that was off the record that was even worse than that. I mean, that they, you know, obviously
yes,
didn't.
Yes, I think it was a lapse of judgment. The way the reporter was with him, it was in a very comfortable environment. They were in Paris, which is the opening scene of that article. McChrystal and his team were letting off steam. It was his anniversary. They were at a bar, and then there was just a very comfortable environment, and I guess he forgot that the reporter was there or felt overly comfortable with him and made a mistake.
I didn't know the bar thing. That's one of the rules here on the Stephanie Miller Show. Nothing ever good ever comes from drinking games with brown liquor.
Yes, if you bring, you know, if you're a commanding general, you don't bring necessarily a reporter who you don't know. This is the first time you're meeting him, who's, you know, is writing a profile for Rolling Stone magazine, out right. drinking with you at a bar.
Yeah, that would seem to be rule A. Richard, so a lot of people, you know, I mean, the headline I'm reading this morning is Obama doubles down on war strategy. Is that the way you feel like people are seeing the selection of General Petraeus?
Certainly. There is no question about continuity. There is no question about a change in policy. This is General Petraeus's policy, and he's bringing the top man that he can find to do the job. So he's definitely doubling down. There is no one that I can think of more senior, more qualified, more serious that he could appoint to this job. So
this is what he ran on, finishing
the last rabbit out of his hat.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and certainly this is what he ran on, is finishing the job in Afghanistan, you know, having said that we got distracted by the wrong war in Iraq. But, you know, obviously, as you know, many on the left, Richard, really are at the point where they're going, what is the strategy in Afghanistan? And al-Qaeda isn't there anymore, largely, are they? I mean, what do you make of what the strategy is, and are we going to get out when we say we are?
Yeah, we haven't said when we're getting out. Everyone focuses on this deadline in about a year from now when the troop surge starts to end. But no one has ever said when we're getting out. And that is a great concern. What is the strategy? How is it working? And how long is it going to take? And I think those are still, well, the strategy, everyone knows what the strategy is right now. And I actually think President Obama enunciated it very well yesterday. He said they're going to, and it was one of the most clear explanations of what the goals are in Afghanistan, and I think he did it very well. He said that the goal is to stop the Taliban's momentum, to fight al-Qaeda, support the government, and help Pakistan and the government of Afghanistan fight local extremists the best they can. So four main objectives. If they're possible, each one is possible. They might not have enough time in the amount of time that the people in the United States are willing to give this conflict anymore. It's been 9 years already.
Richard, I know this is sort of an open-ended question, but I mean, what is your sense being there, how things are going? I mean, I know the U.S. is gearing up for a big offensive in Kandahar, correct?
Correct and not correct. There is not going to be a military push on Kandahar. Some people have said they're going to attack the city. There will be no attack on Kandahar. What they're trying to do is a cleanup operation to improve the policing of the city, improve the local government. So it's more of a focus on Kandahar than it is a Fallujah-style offensive like we saw in Iraq. This Kandahar is very important. It is the birthplace of the Taliban. It is the center of gravity of the Taliban. So that's one thing. In general, no, I think the strategy is not going so well right now. This is the deadliest month ever in the war. There is frustration among many of the soldiers that the rules of engagement, the rules that they have to use that dictate when they're allowed to use force are too tight, that Afghans aren't taking well to this Hearts and Minds campaign, that American troops are out there trying to engage with Afghans and win them over and convince them that they should reject the Taliban and embrace the American plan. And Afghans, by and large, aren't doing that. So there is a frustration. Now, the American commanders will say it's still too early. It might take a year to know if the counterinsurgency strategy is working. And you tell me, you interact with the public and have a domestic show. Do the American people have a year's more patience to know even if this strategy is working?
Yeah, it's a tough question, Richard. You have a special coming up on Sunday on Dateline on Afghanistan, correct, on NBC?
That is correct, on Dateline this Sunday, and it is about one particular battle in Afghanistan that was very significant, and a lot of soldiers were killed and injured in this battle at a remote outpost just about 2 years ago. And what's so important about it is it became a very underreported turning point in this war. The American soldiers were pushed out onto this little outpost, surrounded by mountains, and they had to build their own defenses, and they were attacked by several hundred Taliban fighters. And after this, the U.S. left the outpost and started changing policy, deciding not to keep American troops in such far-flung, remote places that are hard to resupply. But after this battle, so that's one story, is the battle, which is quite a harrowing account. Then you have the second story, which is the parents of the soldiers who were killed there decide to launch their own investigation, figuring out, well, how could this be? How were our sons left in this indefensible situation? And they uncovered many, many mistakes, and they led to a series of investigations that have been ongoing into this incident. And there have been recent developments in the story even this week. So it has been a constant fight for this family to try and get answers.
Well, speaking of which, boy, certainly among other people, the Tillman family, I believe, welcomed this decision on General McChrystal, because a lot of people thought, you know, that was one strike already too many before even, you know, he's had a couple other walking off the reservations even after that, correct?
Well, the Tillman situation was the first time he really entered into the public scrutiny, because before he had this job. General McChrystal was in charge of Black Ops, the a command called JSOC, which is the most secretive special operations force in the world, in the United States. They do all of the high-value target assassinations, the snatch and grabs. They are the most, you know, dangerous individuals that the U.S. military has. He ran this command, and he was very good at it. Now,
yeah.
While he was also at this in this command, he was in charge of the Ranger Regiment, which Pat Tillman was part of, and he's been accused of, when Tillman was killed by friendly fire, of not adequately or quickly releasing that information and effectively being involved in a hush-up campaign. Those are the accusations. Anyway, he has apologized for that.
Right. Richard, I have to ask you before you go, would you believe my brother-in-law is in Afghanistan? He's on a government contract. He's a lawyer, you know, involved in the privatizing the oil and gas industry, etc. And his life sounds like a living hell. What is your life like living in these foreign war zones?
Well, we live, I must admit, we live better than most of the contractors that are here, because the contractors tend to live on American military bases. They get contracts to work with the Afghan government or Iraqi government or to work with the Department of Defense, and they live on these paces that can, it sometimes feels like a prison life.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
You have to walk around with a flak jacket, you eat food off a tray, and you could be there for 4 years, and okay,
oh,
you get paid
God.
A little bit more than you would in the States, but, you know, you live in a trailer and you are eating food off a tray.
Nice.
Here, you know, journalists live differently. I'm in a house right now in the middle of Kabul. We have, it's in a fairly nice area. We have a barbecue outside.
Oh, wow.
We cook for ourselves. We have our own transport, our own vehicles. We don't live on military bases, so we move around as we wish. And the same thing was true in Baghdad. You know, we lived in a hotel for a long time. So while you were a contractor, you live on this confined living. No, our hotel wasn't great. It was attacked several times, and it was blown up. But when it wasn't being blown up, it was a, you know, decent lifestyle.
Well, that's I don't know. I guess that's a low bar, but we appreciate your fight.
The bar is low. The bar is low.
It didn't blow up, so it was a good day. Yeah. Yeah, Richard Engel.
Better than living in a prison compound. I couldn't take that.
That's true.
That's for sure. MSNBC's chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel. We so appreciate your time and the dangerous work that you do to do such great reporting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks for helping me promote the Dateline special. I hope people watch
this Sunday on NBC. Thanks so much, Richard. Oh, there he goes. He's on probably one of those big satin war phones things. All right, 40.
Wow.
You know that your GI Joe had. All right,
yeah.
46 minutes after
Afghanistan
the hour.
Is like camping, except for all the blowing up of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. 47 minutes. He had me until the blowing up of things. 47 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
You people make me sick.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Barry in New York. Hi, Barry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hamid Karzai is a crystal supporter. Really? Did Obama need any other reason to dump him? Oh, yeah, Pat Tillman, spotted up in England, all that
yep.
stuff. And really, you really live in New York? I thought you were tougher than that.
No.
No, as it turns out, I'm a big meow.
It's okay. We'll love you anyway.
Thank you, baby.
I'll see you well coast to coast.
All right, honey. Thank you. Let's go to Chad in Idaho. Hello, Chad.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I've called the RNC and I've called some Republican senators, and they have no intention of working with Obama on this jobs bill, and I hope he realizes that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just horrible. They talk, they don't want to spend. I mean, a little less Arsenio and a little more Shaft. Can he please get mad a little bit? I mean, seriously.
Thank you. All right.
I think that was a little
He's
bit
too
racist.
Arsenio. Mm. I haven't heard that one yet. Kevin in Washington, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Kev.
Good morning, lovely Stephanie.
Good morning, baby.
I was very sorry to be informed about your foot.
Yes.
I'm truly distressed. I mean, I guess no secret.
You know, as someone that's actually carried me at an event before, I should hire you to come to L.A. and carry me. everywhere.
I got to tell you about that. You have to beat down that redhead that's like totally taking your career. She's so copying you, including having a black gentleman that's really into you picking her up.
Who are we talking about?
Oh God, she was just on Joy Behar's show. The one that's on the D-list. What's her name?
Oh, Kathy Griffin.
Yeah,
oh,
she's an aged Republican mother. She talks about box wine, and then the other day she talked about this black guy that's really into it. And with a picture of her picking her up. And I'm like,
well, how dare she that? Much.
Absolutely, but I'll get on that another day. But for now, I wanted to talk about the oil spill. You know, Superman is one of my favorite superhero characters, but there was one thing that I always thought was fake. Not that, you know, no one can tell who he is with the glasses, but, you know, that no one believed when they said that his world would be destroyed, that no one at least looked into it. I said even human beings wouldn't be that stupid, much less an advanced race. Well, here we are with the oil spill, when you can visibly see every day how much damage it's causing, and there's still people talking about, well, we'll just keep drilling. You don't even have a six-month moratorium on it. I don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Don't believe your eyes. Don't believe what you're seeing on the TV.
Yeah, the TV lies.
All right. The president yesterday talking about Afghanistan.
Make no mistake, we have a clear goal. We are going to break the Taliban's momentum. We are going to build Afghan capacity. We are going to relentlessly apply pressure on Al-Qaeda and its leadership, strengthening the ability of both Afghanistan and Pakistan to do the same.
Yeah, well.
Yes, Jim?
Yes, who? Yes, Eeyore?
It's starting to sound a little like peace with honor. You know.
Well, obviously the main issue yesterday, the General McChrystal, so I guess our fantasy didn't happen. He didn't say, I quit. You can't quit. He did accept his resignation. Remember, we don't know how that goes, whether he can go, no, you can't quit. But he did. He accepted his resignation, the president, yesterday.
It undermines the civilian control of the military that is at the core of our democratic system. And it erodes the trust that's necessary for our team to work together to achieve our objectives in Afghanistan.
He said McChrystal's statements did not meet the standard that should be set by a commanding general. The president again.
I don't make this decision based on any difference in policy with General McChrystal, as we are in full agreement about our strategy.
So, McChrystal, we said this yesterday, apparently had acknowledged I've compromised the mission. I was told that he resigned even before the meeting. Did you hear that?
I had heard that, yes. But I think officially he gave the letter to Obama in that meeting, and the meeting was less than 15 minutes, from what I understand.
Yeah. Still to be a fly on the wall. All right.
Not much to talk about once you turn in your letter of resignation.
Yeah, so much really to say. Just kind of awkward.
So how about that World Cup?
Yeah. Don't go changing.
Landon Donovan, huh? That was cool.
Don't go changing.
Yeah, did you get your new iPhone yet? You know, that sort of thing.
Oh, everybody's talking. You got your iPhone yesterday, geek boy?
I got my iPhone in the mail yesterday. I love it. It's very crispy.
All right, the president yesterday.
It is my duty to ensure that no diversion complicates the vital mission that they are carrying out. That includes adherence to a strict code of conduct.
And then he talked about tolerating debate but not division.
I've just told my national security team that now is the time for all of us to come together. Doing so is not an option but an obligation. I welcome debate among my team, but I won't tolerate division.
Yeah, we'll see coming up in Right Wing World. I think Glenn Beck says he shouldn't have done it because otherwise he'll seem thin-skinned, Jen. He's too,
Yeah, Glenn Beck says any other president would have done it except for Obama.
He's too tetchy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's too thin-skinned. He'll cry at the drop of a hat.
It says a guy that weeps every night on television.
Shut up.
President again.
Let me say to the American people, this is a change in personnel, but it is not a change in policy.
Well,
yeah, well,
that's a good or bad thing, depending on your feelings on all that.
The policy being, when do we get out? When we win. Right. And what does that mean exactly?
So the decision obviously widely supported on both sides of the aisle. John McCain yesterday.
There is a role for the military in our society, and that role is that you not only obey civilian leadership, but you respect civilian leadership, and if you don't, then you resign.
And his little sidekick, Lindsey Graham, his little wingman.
The President of the United States, our Commander-in-Chief, had no other choice in my view. I've been a military officer most of my adult life, and there's lines you can't cross. Those lines were crossed.
58 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, that website. Check it out. It is frozen magically in carbonite. It's a must for my computer. It should be a must for your computer, too. It automatically backs up your files on your PC or Mac whenever you're connected to the Internet. Go to Carbonite.com. Enter Stephanie for my special 15-day free trial, plus 2 months free with any subscription. Carbonite.com. Offer code Stephanie. All right, someone sent us a lovely sound drop about my disastrous move to New York, which ends tomorrow. Here we go.
I hope you're all very proud of yourselves. So, my dear, you think you can get to Broadway. Well, let me tell you something. Broadway has no room for people like you. Not the Broadway I know. My Broadway takes people like you and eats them up and spits them out. And if you think you can build yourself up by knocking other people down, good luck!
So that's what happened. All right.
That's pretty much our show, knocking other people down.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Like bowling pins.
And we knock each other down, too, so it all comes full circle.
Mark, here's a lovely offer, though. Mark in Minneapolis writes, staff, welcome home. See, well, I won't be home till tomorrow. Back to L.A. tomorrow. Seems like you have to learn everything the hard way, Calamity. I could have... I am. I'm Calamity Steph, technically. Mm-hmm. I could have told you, home is what you see when you shut your eyes and click your heels 3 times. So you're pitching camp in L.A. for permanent. Well, before you unpack, let me just run this past. You ever thought of moving up here to Moosylvania? It's lovely this time of year. The moose are in rut. We could make a life. Raise up a family. I'll take my answer off the air. Oh, why the hell not?
That's funny. I've never heard Minnesota called Moosylvania before. That's
Frost
funny.
By Charles, Moosylvania.
And Trick, oh, we had a... We had Ted Boutros on the other day, who is Ted Olson's law
Boutros?
Partner in the...
Golly. Hmm? That never gets old.
In the Prop 8 trial. And we. Rick writes, staff, assuming Ted wins his case, which of course he should, he would theoretically be free to marry Boutros Ghali, who could then take his last name. I get it.
So it would be Ted Boutros Ghali.
Yes. Wonder if he has to wear a boot to have that many Boutroses in his name.
Yeah, it's 3 Boutroses.
That's what they would ask me if I'm married. Do you and your boot take this Boutros? All right.
Uh-huh.
Man. Hey, everybody. Carl Frisch is here from Media Matters for some right-wing.
Carl.
Okay. Carl Frisch. Exciting. For Media Matters for America.
So inviting to me.
Oh, he's so frisch. Good morning, Carl.
Good morning.
All right, so let's dive into the right-wing world, shall we, kids? Glenn Beck on the radio on war.
War is your last resort. War means there's no way to deal with these people. So there's no way to deal with them. You kill them as fast as you possibly can. We're not doing that. We didn't under Bush. We're not certainly not doing it now. And I fear we are intentionally being brought in deeper into a quagmire. I think we're intentionally having our troops very busy. Break the spirit of our military.
What? Hmm. I don't really even understand what he's ever talking about. Do you, Carl? That's my first problem.
Sometimes, it's not. You know, he basically is saying that libertarian magic dust would make Afghanistan go better. He wants the private military out there because we all know we haven't had any problems with Blackwater.
Right.
Yes. We're intentionally his conspiracy goes so deep, I get a little dizzy. Intentionally having our troops busy to break the spirit of the troops.
Right.
But was he also saying that war should be used as a last resort? Well, then what went on with the Bush administration? I don't understand that.
I think when he says resort, he means like, a sandals vacation.
Oh.
Club dead.
Yeah. Club dread.
Wow, speaking of conspiracy theories, here is the drug-addled gas bag, Rush Limbaugh.
Now, would it be cynical of me to question the timing of this article, an article which wasn't even supposed to come out until next Friday?
The McChrystal story.
Mm-hmm. But it's clear it could have been written at any time. What a great way to get BP off the front page.
Because
Obama's losing that one in the polls, folks.
Oh, he's clever, isn't he?
Well, he also controls everything.
Yes.
He controls every media outlet. He controls the banks. He is all-powerful.
He controls the vertical and the horizontal.
And, in Russia's world, as you recall, he speculated that the president may have been behind blowing up the well. So I'm not sure what he was trying to get off the front pages then. But presumably when he blew up the well, he was getting something. And now the McChrystal thing.
Obama also supplies, controls the supply of OxyContin for North America. So,
yes, there we go, magically full circle. Okay. Andrew, sorry, I was just having a flashback to my last Larry King appearance that I did with Andrea.
Tentaros.
Human, yeah. Right-wing velociraptor Andrea Tentaros on Fox News.
They demanded $20 billion to put in this slush fund while they act like Johnny Appleseed and sprinkle it around. This is not a negotiation, Marcia. It's a political shakedown. It's a stick-up. And Barton was right. He had a legitimate issue to make, and it was lost when he apologized to BP. But Palin's absolutely right, and for Rahm Emanuel to go off like that, he has not a leg to stand on.
Wow. This is what's most stunning is, as Joe Barton said, the biggest tragedy here is what's being done to BP, and now the biggest tragedy, what's being done to Joe Barton, you see?
It's funny because, all these Republican Washington folks keep on saying, Joe Barton doesn't speak for us. And then when they get a chance to go on TV, people like Tartan, what was her name?
Andrea Tentaros.
Andrea Tentaro gets up and says, well, I don't exactly agree with him, but I pretty much agree with everything he said. And then they call it a shakedown.
It's a stick-up. That's a new one.
Yeah, it's a stick-up, yeah.
It's a shakedown and a stick-up.
Obama's either... They want to either remind us that Obama's African-American by using loaded language, or they want us to have, like, old-timey black-and-white video, black-and-white movie depictions of the president wearing, like, a striped outfit and a bandana over his face.
Exactly. Eric Bowling on the Fox and Freaks.
It seems like right now the oil companies are, they're not really loved at the moment, and they're using it almost like an ATM. Let's tax them for this. Let's tax them for that. Develop a whole big bunch of funds for cleanup, for spill, for whatever, emergencies.
Right.
They just keep doing it.
Cleanup, spill, emergencies, whatever, all that gay liberal stuff. I just bombed something.
Sorry, Carl.
Sometimes with Eric Bowling, you don't know where to start. But I wonder what he thinks of the people in the Gulf Coast. If the fund, the $20 billion fund, which should just cover the damages from the spill, not the cleanup, if people out there don't have jobs, they're just or something to him. So
yeah.
It's good to know that there are other people that actually care about the people that live in the Gulf Coast.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to somebody about this morning, Carl. It just is further evidence. There just is nothing this president can do that they will not find a way to criticize. I think it was it Ben Stein, Chris, I was on Larry King with the other night, that was, this is troubling constitutionally, and he should have called Congress back in. Can you imagine if the president had called Congress back in to compel BP to do this? Then they would have said, here it is, the government again, getting too much government in the way of,
They should have called in so that Joe Barton could, help block it. It's essentially what the Ferris Bueller's teacher has a problem with it. Then there must be a problem.
Anyone?
Anyone?
Well, how can it be a shakedown when the fund was BP's idea to begin with?
Yes, they did it voluntarily.
Yeah.
Are you trying to insert logic into
this? I'm sorry. You can't talk logic when you're talking about Republicans.
Carl, I'm sorry. I don't know what you did to deserve this, but it's a double helping of Glenn Beck.
They're going to shove us into alternative energies. Okay. Well, that's great. I just wish the solar panels worked. Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's run New York City on windmill power. Let's do that. You know what that is? Besides suicide, it's like forcing somebody to drive over a bridge when it's only half finished. It'll be great when it's done, but crossing it now, you might plummet to your death.
It's suicide going to solar energy. Wow.
It is, frankly. You know, he might be thinking about the geese or something when it comes to wind power, but I'm not sure who he thinks. He must think that there's, like, people running on treadmills on top of solar panels. I don't think he quite understands what alternative energy is, other than part of some big Bilderberg conspiracy theory,
right.
And Obama's in the center of it.
He is becoming just the wacky conspiracy theorist on Fox News Channel. What is going on with Glenn?
Becoming?
That's a plot to make me look like a wacky conspiracy theorist.
He was never this way on CNN Headline News.
Well, I think Jim's right. There's a conspiracy to make him look like a crazy conspiracy guy.
Well, you know how every year one of the networks has one of those earthquake movies, and mm-hmm. it's always a bigger earthquake? It's like the 9.9 earthquake hits L.A., the 10.5 earthquake hits L.A., right? Every time it's a little bit bigger. I think that Glenn Beck, he's seen his ratings slide over the last year, and he's like, well, I guess I just have to go top myself every single night on TV, and so it gets crazier and crazier and crazier.
And you wonder if, like, you know, his producers start, like, it's literally just they're having drinking bets. Like, it's a dare. See if he'll say this tonight. He did it! He did it!
So it's a producer prank, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
All right.
You just gave me an idea.
O'Reilly on the McChrystal thing.
There is only one time General McChrystal is quoted bad-mouthing someone in the article. He mocks Richard Holbrooke, a presidential advisor. All the other stuff is allegedly from his aides. I say allegedly because Rolling Stone magazine did a piece on me a few years ago, and it was a total hatchet job. The writer, John Colapinto, was flat-out dishonest. The writer of this article, Michael Hastings, has a long left-wing history, so let the reader beware.
Okay, so instead of slamming McChrystal, he slams Rolling Stone magazine.
I see.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, it Rolling Stone making him look like an insubordinate asshat. That's what it is.
Well, you know, one time Rolling Stone wrote an article about me that I didn't like, so I can totally, like, understand where these guys are coming from. He's such an idiot.
Yeah.
He always finds a way to bring it back to him somehow.
It always has to be O'Reilly. I mean, I'm surprised when he was talking all that smack about that McDonald's French commercial, he didn't say, well, you know, they didn't call me to be in it. It would have been a much better commercial if I was in the McDonald's French commercial.
Exactly. Carl Frisch from Media Matters. Thank you, sir. See you next week.
You too. Have a good one.
All right. There he goes. Excellent. You know, kids.
Hal Sparks will see him next week.
Oh, that's right. Pardon me.
Yes.
Hal Sparks will be filling in. We will be on a much-deserved vacation.
That's right.
I will be rocking in the corner in the fetal position, and, recovering from my various mental and physical and emotional injuries.
That's right. And speaking of Hal Sparks, he is going to be co-hosting The View tomorrow.
Oh, yes. It's Man Week.
Really?
Hilarious.
Yes.
And he's going to call us from the green room tomorrow.
That's right.
So
that's why it's not Hump Days with Hal today.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. Kids, I think I've mentioned Carbonite to you. Don't be one of those too late people. I got a letter from someone the other day that said they were literally had it on their to-do list to get Carbonite.com, and they didn't. And and they lost. He's a composer. Lost all but a bunch of music compositions he was working on. When a computer disaster happens, your first instinct is to panic. That's why I have Carbonite Online Backup. There is no need to panic. I know that you'll see if your computer... There's a good chance my computer will get blown up, I think.
It almost did.
Yes.
Along with the rest of your car.
Exactly. And all of my belongings. On its. Danny in Chicago, that's his name. He's a good guy, though. Called, he's like, yeah, Stephanie got
a little problem.
The car
broke down. Well, not the car, the truck, well, burst into flame. But, you know, it's not as bad as it sounds.
Literally, when I was on my way to the doctor with my broken foot, I was like, okay. 20 minutes after the hour. We will be back with the latest on what's happening in Mr. Spacely's office with General McChrystal. Right in here. 20 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm sorry, that's inappropriate.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
The meeting is over at the White House. General McChrystal has left the White House.
That's right.
He has left the building, ladies and gentlemen.
Did they use GoToMeeting?
Please, type no. Stephanie in the referral box.
No, he was summoned to an in-face meeting, in-person meeting. So we will in-face. What?
Yeah. What?
What?
What's an in-face?
You're drunk.
I am. I will be having an in-face meeting with you two on Friday in my office.
If all goes well.
Yes, yeah. I, the way this move is going, I don't know.
You don't break another metatarsal.
I hear if your plane doesn't explode on the way here.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. Thank you. My dog walkers that are watching my Patrice and her husband Victor are watching Max for a week.
Because, Max!
They made a little joke yesterday about how they might steal him. And have a big party in my apartment. I'm like, ha ha ha, that's funny. Please, I need my security deposit back, please. Just don't punch any holes in the walls. All right, David in Minneapolis on General McChrystal. Hi, David.
Good morning, you lovely people. Hey, my question about the general is, if he is fired, can he his retirement benefits be reduced? Is it different than if he quits or if he's fired?
Right, that's what I was wondering. I was asking, like, if how that works. If he, you know, offers his resignation, you know, is it bad? You can't quit, you're fired. Or how does it, yeah, exactly, how does it work?
Well, putatively, I mean, I hate to say it, but I'd like to see him get away with as little as possible. I mean, that was very detrimental to the country with what he did.
Yep, I hear you. Yeah, you know who probably will be happy, Jim, would be Mary Tillman, who the mother of Pat Tillman, who sought to warn the president of the White House about McChrystal when he was going to be appointed in the first place. Senator John Kerry yesterday on...
He's a terrific soldier. And this is a critical moment in Afghanistan. And as far as I am concerned personally, the top priority is our mission in Afghanistan.
Which is what exactly?
Well, I think we know what it is. It's just, you know, but that's the other thing, Jim, that's been talked about is that he's not doing a good job. You know, he's not getting the results either. So that's certainly something that doesn't...
Well, we keep getting number two and number three guys, but we end up taking out a lot of civilians in the process. So what are we accomplishing exactly?
Senator Mitch McChinley said yesterday.
Rather than getting diverted off on this, I think it's important for everybody around here to remember that... We've got a big stake in having the Afghan conflict come out the right way.
I'd like to have a big steak, but I can only eat lettuce with my turtle mouth.
No, you know, maybe it is a good juncture, Chris.
I'll give you a moment.
I imagine that we're going too fast once again for Yertle the Turtle, and the president ought to really consider for a while
think
before he fires him.
Slow down and stop and think about it for a while. Maybe take down a couple of heads of iceberg. Don't bother cutting into the wall.
I was going to say, perhaps it is a good juncture, though, Jim, you're right, is to rethink, like, what is our, when you know, to come out the right way in Afghanistan. Well, what does that mean now?
Well, you know what I think. You should just airlift anyone with a vagina out of Afghanistan.
I think we should have gone with the Jim Ward counterinsurgency strategy.
Where would we put them?
Taliban go all gay on
Jim
each other.
Jim could take custody of the vaginas until they find a forever home.
Yeah, Janice would love that.
Honey, it was my idea to airlift all the vaginas out of Afghanistan. Now what do we do with all of
women.
Them?
Wow.
Do they need a vagina walker like a dog needs a dog walker?
29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Break my red-hot, glowing ass.
Ow. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the
Don't
hour.
Give me appointment for that?
Pardon me?
Sorry. Never mind.
1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Oh, there's breaking media news, Chris.
Yes. Former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer and 2010 Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Kathleen Parker will co-host a new hour-long CNN primetime news program starting in the fall.
Okay.
Interesting. Which Governor Spitzer just told me two nights ago at a party, and he told me not to move out of New York, because what? Oh.
It will be a roundtable discussion just program saying. That will probably need punditry.
Just saying, I could have you on every night, but, you know, if you want to go back to L.A. and the smog, you know, it's up to you.
To move back in the fall? No. Oh, well, my metatarsal should heal by then. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Congratulations to him. I like him a lot. I'm telling you, smart and funny. And I actually asked him in person. I said, I don't mean to be rude, but why did you resign? I was serious. He was very candid. Because I said, you were a great governor. And I just was talking about some of our folks, friends on the right, just have no shame. None of them quit. You know what I'm saying?
We still have bitter.
Pardon me? Yeah, and by the way, did you read that latest thing? What is
yes.
David Vitter's, his person in charge of women's issues?
Yes.
Was just arrested for a knife-wielding incident with his girlfriend or something?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, love of God.
That's a woman's issue, not being knifed to death by some whack job.
Perhaps he was, yeah, it was a,
but
sort of a
Eliot Spitzer
demonstration
loved,
with a prop.
Eliot Spitzer likes the ladies.
Mm-hmm.
He was very candid with me and talked about, you know, his wife and kids. And I think he I think he really is somebody that's why he said he did. I mean, he said, if you knew my wife and kids and that he had to do what was best for him and for his family. And he said, I'm stupid, like most men. And, you know, he was very, I thought, humble and candid and whatever. So I wish him well in his new venture.
I do, yeah. Too.
Particularly if Stephanie Miller is involved. Let's hope on satellite from Los Angeles. All right. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Let's go to Chris in Oakland on McChrystal. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Steph. Hey, guys. It's been too long. How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Hey,
we wouldn't know if it's been too long because we don't know if you're listening or not, but all right.
Well, I'm listening. I just didn't have anything to say.
Okay. All right. Good. Go ahead.
Anything good. Hey, call me cynical. And I apologize for it. I don't know what could have made me cynical about the right wing, but I got a feeling that this McChrystal thing, I think we're giving him too much credit for his insubordination and too much credit for whatever he's trying to do with this criticize the president. I have this sneaking suspicion, if we keep an eye on this guy, he's going to surface in a couple months, you know. He's going to come out, he's going to write a book, and there's going to be a little, you know, internet noise about him, and I think he's going to pop up on the Sarah Palin crazy, bat squeeze, crazy train Tea Party speaking circuit. I think this guy's making his move. I think he's just gonna do this to make a bunch of money like she did.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we were saying, though, that even people on Fox were all saying he should be fired. So, you know, I'm not sure where his audience is yet. I'm not sure, you know, who's for outright insubordination. Let's go to Tom in Los Angeles, who served under McChrystal. Hi, Tom.
How you doing? I actually served twice under General McChrystal in 25 years. I served with him once in the 75th Ranger Regiment, and then the second time at MacDill Air Force Base when he was a liaison officer with JSOG. All I can tell you is the guy, he shoots from the hip. You know, he is a four-star general, and there were a lot of comments made by a lot of people about President Bush and about Obama. Just, you know what? The guy put his boot in his mouth.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. He was the first to admit it.
Like I said, I have the utmost respect for the man. The man is a warrior. The man can lead anybody into battle. Unfortunately, he's in a position now where he's not a politician. And this was a mistake.
Well, that's why
Obama
you keep
made.
Your yap shut and just take two feet.
You're right. I think you were totally right. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. However, I can tell you, President Obama is not a stupid man. He did make a mistake by appointing General McChrystal to this position. It's a political position. This is no different than
Well, you know what, Tom? I don't know that I disagree with you on that, because we were saying that, you know, Jim Webb one again, is that, you know, and a lot of people were saying this, Jim, this has been a history. This is not, it would be different if, you know, everybody makes one mistake, but.
I think he's had three bites out of the apple here. One was with the situation with Pat Tillman. He was in the middle of that. I mentioned that during his confirmation hearing. The second was when he gave an interview with 60 Minutes while this policy was being formulated. The third was when he was giving a speech in London. At the same time, other people were in the White House trying to figure out where to go on the policy. So I think it's a pretty serious matter, but it's up to the president.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, somebody said it. It's not. It was not his first time to the woodshed.
Right.
He's been to the woodshed before. So.
And plus, he was bad-mouthing the United States of America on foreign soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. According to the right, that is inexcusable.
Pat in Madison, Wisconsin. Hello, Pat. Oops, sorry.
Hello, Stephanie.
Yes,
compared to what the right wing has been saying about Obama, this is nothing. And I think that's what McChrystal and his people are probably thinking about, that this they could probably just slip this on by. My feeling is keep him on there. Obama owns him. Keep him in there. Make him suffer.
No, I don't. I disagree. But I, you know, that maybe I don't know. But there is something. You know, we talk about this all the time. But the level of our discourse. If you see any of these people interviewed at these teabagger rallies, mm-hmm. He's right. You know, Joe Wilson's yelling "You lie" at the president during a State of the Union. Maybe there is just a, you know, as they say, a coarsening of our dialogue.
Right. I don't.
You know what I say to that? That.
Yeah. I don't know that he should be made to suffer, but. You know, he should be fired or the president should accept his resignation. Absolutely.
Pat in Chicago thinks he should be demoted. Hello, Pat.
Well, hey, I'm not an expert on the Uniform Code of Military Justice, but I have seen a lot of World War II movies. So I'm...
Well, then why are you calling here if you're not an expert?
And you stayed in the motel last night.
Why not knock him down to Buck Private and give him a court-martial and let him go to Leavenworth?
According to the Military Code of that wrong. According to that, this is a court-martialable offense.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, I was sent that quite a few times via email this morning.
Yeah, I know. Everybody has their revenge fantasies. Can we make him a private and send him back and deploy him six times?
Yeah. Make him do KP?
Well, no, just put him in combat. Over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You're right. Or is the peeling potatoes just the World War II movie we saw somewhere? Steve in California, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steph. The issue is insubordination, and McChrystal has exhibited that as against Vice President Biden, President Obama, and their other high-level military advisors. And I think he shouldn't be allowed to resign and take his benefits with him. I don't think that there's a firing that's going to be effective enough. I think the other caller had it right.
Oh, and by the way,
marshal him.
It's, you know, what's being said in a lot of circles is maybe Joe Biden was the one that was the most right about Afghanistan, so maybe he could bite Joe Biden. Maybe Joe Biden should offer that advice if he runs into him. Yes, Chris,
okay,
go ahead.
According to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 88, contempt towards officials. Any commissioned officer who uses contemptuous words against the president, the vice president, Congress, the secretary of defense, the secretary of a military department, the secretary of transportation, or the governor or legislature of any state, territory, commonwealth, or possession in which he is on duty or present shall be punished as a court-martial may direct.
Hmm. I wonder how soon we're going to have news after this meeting this morning.
I don't know. CNN isn't talking about that right now. They're talking about lesbians. So.
I see that. I'm like growing up in a lesbian family. Yeah.
Have to wait a little bit until the breaking lesbian news
first
is over.
Word about lesbians.
Okay. Let's see. Ben in Santa Fe, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi, Steph. How are you today?
Good. Go ahead.
Fine. First of all, this guy is divisive. It's a setup, and he's lied to us. You and your dog could run Afghanistan better than he does. And when your foot gets better, put Bear Whiz on it. It'll heal it right up.
Bear
Whiz?
Bear pee?
Bear therapy?
No, Bear pee.
Bear Whiz. I'm trying to be not obscene here. Trust me.
How does bear pee help heal your broken metatarsal?
I don't know, but they did it to me.
You are making that up, Ben.
What did I lie to you?
He just wants to get a bear to pee on you, Stephanie.
Now it's become giant national game of punk. Ed just wanted to see if he could get me to move to New York on a whim, and now this guy wants to see if I'll put bear pee on my foot.
See if a bear will pee on your foot. Well, you got close to that in Alaska one time.
So yeah, you did.
I did. Take my picture with the bear. Let's go to Steve in Long Island. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome, Steve.
Good morning, all. I have two quick comments. One, the Rolling Stone article was read by Randy Rhoads on her show yesterday, which seems to paint him as Marlon Brando's character from Apocalypse Now.
Did she read the whole article? Like, yeah. Like Keith Olbermann does the Thurber stories?
Yes, she did.
Yes.
Really?
Yes, it comes across very much that he feels he could do it with his men, doesn't care what it takes, he'll do it. And the other comment I have is that the overturning of the moratorium was done by a judge named Marty Feldman.
No way.
It wasn't a joke.
Really? Well, let me check that breaking news, Chris. The judge, Marty Feldman?
Awesome. As in Marty Feldman Eyes?
I guess so.
Huh.
You brought me an abnormal brain?
Fantastic.
Happy something.
Sanchez and Montebello, hola, que tal, adios, mio, mi amigo.
Mamacita y los mookies, muy buenos nachos.
Yes.
On the subject of McChrystal right now, I was just reading a little blurb on the internet from Politico. They have obtained an unreleased recording from Mary Tillman, who had written directly to President Obama to warn him about McChrystal, mm-hmm. saying that he wasn't what he seemed. And you remember the conversations that Jim and I used to have about Pat Tillman and all the research I was doing. That man was definitely fragged. If you go back and read about the three shot groups, either his head was restrained, but this was definitely no accident. So McChrystal was involved in a cover-up there. So the other thing that I wanted to say, obviously there's going to be a changing of the guards here, but how do you guys feel about the future of the Afghanistan war? Because as I was saying last weekend, the Pentagon, of all places, was a place where they announced that there's going to be this new riches of $3 trillion in all of these different minerals. For a fact, that goes all the way back to the Russians. Well, they were trying to invade Afghanistan, so they're trying to pump it up because at this point, 52% of the American population does not have a favorable view of the Afghanistan war. So are we still going to escalate? Who's the next general in line? Those are my questions.
Well, the escalation in Kandahar was supposed to be coming up very, very, very soon.
Yeah.
And so that's why this whole McChrystal thing is coming up at a really, really bad time.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's, you know, Jim asked the question, what is the strategy? I mean, maybe, you know, it's a good thing to be able to really, you know, not just McChrystal, but make it about this whole thing. Like, what I think I saw, what's his name, Robert Greenwald on TV last night, who's one of the people that's been talking about this. What is the strategy? And, you know, what does finish mean?
Yeah.
46 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
She's your information slut. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
You know, it is not easy to ice and elevate my foot and operate the phone system here, I'll have you know.
What?
And my own microphone. I can't be expected.
There's some good news, though.
Yes, Jim.
Von Seal has emailed you, and she's offered Fuller, too, to be your nurse.
Oh, awesome. Her sullen, resentful teenager?
Yes.
She's going to send her to California for elder care?
Although, thanks to your upbringing, she's not so sullen and resentful anymore.
Mm. But she says Fuller's idea of taking care of her sick mom has consisted of her hollering up the staircase, "Hey, you want a sandwich or what?"
Yes, I'm sure having a teenager around, that'll really reduce my stress level. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Let's go to Gino in Illinois on General McChrystal. Hi, Gino.
Hello, Stephanie and crew.
Hello.
Listen, here's an audio clip for you to use. As Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, used to say, know your role and shut your mouth.
Okay, thank you.
Huh?
Oh, it's a...
Barack.
He did this.
It's the Barack skit from...
Right. He was doing a skit for us for free.
Oh, thanks.
Michael in Chicago, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hi, Mike.
I think that Obama shouldn't allow this guy to resign. He should fire him so that can't bust him down a few ranks. So when he's on the Sarah Palin moron tour, they can't introduce him as former general. They can say, you know, former private or former defendant.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I don't know all the ins and outs of that.
That would make him a hero to the right wing.
Yeah.
He was,
If Obama bumped him down, that would make him a total hero.
Well, it would look vengeful rather than just, you know. Andy in Asheville, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Andy.
Hi. I actually do have an idea for how Obama should handle this from a management point of view.
Okay.
Don't knock him down a few ranks. Chew him out in the Oval Office. Ask for his apology. And then hand him a piece of paper with three possible assignments on it, like training Delta Force or overseeing the Arlington National Cemetery or working as liaison with the arms suppliers, and say, which one do you want to do next? Mm-hmm. Reassign him, and that way he can't become a martyr because he has simply been reassigned to a different position. And if he does refuse the assignments and quits in a fit of pique, it'll be he who's quitting in a time of war.
Right. Yeah, interesting.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I don't remember what my options were, Chris, during your last spate of insubordination. I could have demoted you, but what's lower than a MOOC? I mean, seriously, there is no rank lower than radio.
I think
that MOOC
sounded
up, so I really have any options.
You signed
and then plus,
minefield
I just lose
duty.
The will to live.
Well,
pardon me?
You signed it in minefield duty, you know, so tap the ground and hold your ears, you know, hoping you don't find one.
I signed him to change my bathwater.
You don't even have an office here to call me into. What kind of boss are you?
I don't even.
Christopher, come to my side of the desk.
I lose interest. What was I going to do? Oh, fire Chris. Oh, well. All right, Tom and Durham, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hey, I have a kind of a different take on this. I'm no big McChrystal fan, but unless I'm missing something, I didn't see any direct quotes from him himself. A lot from his subordinates.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know,
he made some direct insults toward Richard Holbrooke. Everything else in the article was said by his staff.
Well, who hasn't? I mean, come on.
You can't do that in the military.
The only other thing I'd like to bring up is the other day you were talking about all the deferments that Cheney and Bush got.
What about Biden?
Didn't he have, like, a whole bunch of deferments during Vietnam?
I actually don't know. I don't. Jim, do you know?
No, I don't.
Biden's, to be quite honest, I don't know. I know his son is serving presently. I don't know. Let's Google that, won't you?
Right away, Ms. Miller.
But the thing
exactly.
About,
whatever.
The thing about the Republicans is they were all for the Vietnam War as long as they weren't fighting it.
Yeah, exactly. Tom and Eureka. Hey, Tom.
Hey, I just wanted to say that, as far as I'm concerned, if Obama does not fire that man, Obama doesn't deserve to be the president. He has to control his military. We need the civilian leadership.
Mm-hmm.
That's his job.
Yep, I hear you. I mean, it seems to me, Jim, like most everybody agrees on this. So I don't know when we're going to hear what news. McChrystal leaves the White House. Breaking news. Looking at CNN. McChrystal leaves the White House. We already know that. Meeting with Obama lasted less than 30 minutes. All right. No word yet. All right. Jim Faisal Shahzad.
Faisal is the fighting lady.
Oh, boy. I'm just saying he has a fitting name because he's such a boob as terrorist goat. You know what I mean? Seriously, he had the wrong kind of exploding bird seed. He left the keys to the other car in the bomb car, and I don't know.
I left my keys in the car. Which way did I go?
Yeah, he's that really dumb crook in every movie. Which way did that go, boss?
What do I do now?
He's a car bomb New York based Times Square guy. He pled guilty 100 times. He's also quite the fine legal mind, as it turns out. He said, I want to plead guilty, and I'm going to plead guilty 100 times forward, he said during the court session. The extent of his cooperation, indeed his impaired enthusiasm for cooperating, may be something of an anomaly. He repeatedly agreed to talk without a lawyer present and waived his right to be taken to court promptly. He's not really very bright on the crime or the legal scheme. Faisal Shahzad.
Maybe you should hire the Schwaz.
All right.
Joe Biden did receive 5 deferments.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right, then. Then we stand, not corrected. We didn't even know in the first place.
Exactly.
So there.
It's the same number that Cheney received. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. All right. Here's a new breaking news story as I leave New York. Only half of New York City subway cars are clean.
That
half
many?
Are clean?
Define clean.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, clean's a little bit of a. The M line, the dirtiest. Oh, yeah. The number 6 and the C line are supposed to be the cleanest. I take the C line. That's my line. It's that's
just
what
words.
They call clean. That's New York clean.
Yeah. So those are just words. I have no idea what you're talking
you're
about.
You're not up to your ankles in bodily fluid, so it's clean. It's fine.
Exactly.
Just
wear exactly. Boots. It's only like ankle. If you're only up ankle deep in human excrement. Okay, 58
and
minutes.
And naked cowboys and cowgirls.
Yeah, sure. 50. Oh, I have a story about the naked cowboy. 58 minutes after the hour, Representative Rush Holt, Democrat of New Jersey, next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. Mama's appearance on The Ed Show on MSNBC from Friday is up there. You know that I'm really hurt if I stop media whoring. I canceled my MSNBC appearance today because I'm going to have to go to the doctor because I broke my foot.
Did you find a doctor to go to?
Pardon me? Yes.
Okay. Good.
Well, I a podiatrist. That's the best I can do for right now.
Dr. Farr.
I'm going to see Dr. Humphlarger.
Humphlarger.
Okay. All right, so I'll update you tomorrow. John Fugelsang will be filling in for Mama in L.A. with the MOOCs tomorrow because I'm going to D.C., which will be, that'll be good. I'll be walking through airports carrying luggage. Perfect.
Oh, boy.
Going to speak to
on crutches.
You know, ironically, this belongs in the Isn't It Ironic file. Among other people, guess who will be there? Podiatrists.
Isn't it ironic?
It's the Office and Professional Employees International Union I'm going to speak to.
Yeah, but I still don't think that's irony. I think that's just coincidental.
Hmm. Okay.
You might be going to ride on that trolley at the airport.
Yeah. Then I go, beep, beep, beep.
With your luck, it'll crash and break your other foot.
Yes, exactly. All right. Representative Elliot Engel of the great state of New York joins us now. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie.
What,
sorry
you
about
know,
your foot. Sorry
oh,
about
I
your
wish...
Foot.
Listen, I wish I'd broken it kicking Tony Hayward's ass like you did at the.
Well,
can you believe the latest? You just questioned him last week, and there he is yachting this weekend.
He's amazing. You know, he comes to our hearing, and essentially tells us nothing, and apologizes, but says that he was not personally responsible for making the decision as to how to drill and what to use to drill when 2 days earlier all the other executives of all the other oil companies said that BP cut corners and tried to save money and there was no way that their company would have drilled the same
way. Apparently he was only in charge of changing the toner in the copier, I guess. He had nothing to do with
apparently.
Yeah,
so with anything. So when you ask him, if you didn't make the decision, who did? He said, well, we're having an investigation. You know, we're trying to investigate. We'll see. And that basically is what he did for about 5 hours. He stonewalled. And I was just thoroughly disgusted. And I told him, you know, you're stonewalling. I don't know why you bothered to come. Apparently your lawyers told you not to to answer anything. And I told him I was thoroughly disgusted. And it's just insulting our intelligence is what he was doing. It's just absurd.
Did you actually get whiplash when Joe Barton apologized to BP?
Well, I think that he was probably given some kind of ultimatum. That's the rumor. And he got up and first he apologized to BP, and then several hours later he came up and said that he didn't mean to imply that they weren't responsible. Oh. And if he offended anybody by saying it, he apologizes for it.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. But, you know, I think as Rahm Emanuel and others have pointed out this weekend, I mean, a lot of right-wingers are saying this, are defending BP and are criticizing the $20 billion. I mean, it's really incredible. This is what they think. This really, he didn't misspeak. These were prepared remarks, right?
Yeah, well, the Club for Growth, which is the conservative, you know, wing of the Republicans, I think they have about 120 members in the House. They essentially said the same thing. They came out with a statement essentially saying the same thing. So, look, you know, it's a funny thing. When I was growing up, I said to my father, what's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican? And he said to me, the Republicans are for the rich man and the Democrats are for the working man.
Mm-hmm.
I never forgot that. So I still think that the Republicans are still for the corporate interests, by and large, and
yeah,
make excuses. But you know, there's no excuse, and Tony Hayward seems to be tone deaf. I mean, I'd love to do a yacht race on the Isle of Wight, but I just think that it's kind of inappropriate for him to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, but you point out that, again, it's not even just BP. You know, you have a record of, you know, what a lot of these guys told Congress. Ms. Lamar, the BP American president in Congress in 2009, said, for those who continue to question the safety of offshore energy operations, I can only point to our record in the Gulf of Mexico. CEO of Exxon said, the industry has developed the technologies that acquired the experience to produce these resources safely and with a minimal environmental footprint. I mean, just one after another of them basically lying, right?
Of course, and on Tuesday's hearing when we had the other oil execs, I read them those quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, who's lying? I said to Tony Hayward, you know, should we believe what they're saying or should we believe what you're saying or, you know, which one of you is lying? You know, they think that we're stupid or that we, you know, have no recourse. You know, they lied. It's pretty obvious that BP lied from the get-go where they were telling us that there was only 5,000 barrels per day leaking, and now we've seen some internal documents that show that early on they realized they were 100,000 barrels per day, 20 times what they were admitting to. So, you know, you really cannot believe a word that they say. I asked Tony Hayward if you have other rigs. He said there's lots of them in the Gulf. How do we know that the same thing won't happen to one of the others? So he had an excuse. Well, those are mostly dry, and it can't happen again.
Uh-huh.
Of course,
yeah.
He said this couldn't happen, and there's evidence, Stephanie, real good evidence that in order to save a few bucks, they cut corners. They cut corners in the way the drill was constructed. They cut corners in terms of the way things were done. And when he became the CEO of BP, he said that you know, the environment was important and that the safety was important, and he would zero in it on it like a laser, he said, to make sure that, you know, safety, you know, was preeminent. And obviously it was just a bunch of bull.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Congressman, where do you stand on drilling right now? I mean, when you know, like you say, I mean, really the most, I thought, terrifying thing was all these other executives where they go, yeah, we have the exact same safety plan as BP does. I mean, you know,
well,
clearly they don't.
That's what's such a joke. You know, for years they told us they had all kinds of safeguards in place, and if something happened, there was a safeguard. If something happened to the safeguard, there was another safeguard, and so on and so forth. And then it turns out there's no safeguards. Nobody knows what they're doing, and it's like the Keystone Cops. You know, every single day BP was searching for a new method to try to plug it up, and now we're told mid-August perhaps, and then who believes that, you know, anymore? I mean, if this doesn't make our country change our policies on oil, I don't know what will.
I've said that. If not now, when? I mean, when without, you know, this picture on TV every day, when are we going to, when, if not now, we're going to get off dirty fuels, when will we?
I don't know. The answer is if we don't do it now, we're never going to do it. I saw some clips of Jimmy Carter and Gerald Ford in the back of the 1970s saying the exact same thing that we're saying now, and here it is 40 years later, and we're still, you know, diddling. I mean, we're just not serious about it, and I think that you know, we passed a bill in the House. It wasn't a perfect bill, but it was a bill that was a step in the right direction. We have the Kerry bill in the Senate, you know, which would put limits on carbon emissions. We need to do that, and we need to look at solar and wind and even nuclear, which I used to be opposed to. But now I think that we can look at everything because we have to get ourselves off of foreign oil, and I think the drilling is wrong. When before this happened, when President Obama said that he wanted to you know, allow more drilling, I issued a release saying that I thought it was a mistake.
Yep. Yeah, well, clearly. I mean, you know, like you were saying, I mean, clearly we were all lied to. I mean, these companies, you know, what they told Congress, and I think, you know, you need to take a serious look before we move forward on this. Congressman, before you go, let me get your take on the other, you know, big story that the Obama administration has decided to file suit to block that Arizona law. Which I think is great. I mean, I think to really take a stand and say bigotry is not the way to solve this, you know, problem, comprehensive immigration reform is the right way to go. What do you think?
Well, I agree with it 100%. And, you know, there's some irony coming out of it because I spoke with one of my colleagues from Arizona, and he said that since Arizona passed that law, a lot of Mexican Americans or people who are here are afraid to be counted in the census. And they think that Arizona will wind up perhaps not gaining as many seats as they thought they were going to gain. They might actually lose a seat because people are just afraid to.
Well, between that and the boycott, I mean, they really are just hurting themselves with this. And I think that, you know, it points to a bigger problem that we really need to get comprehensive immigration reform done, don't we?
There's no doubt about it. I'm a co-sponsor of the bill, and I think that the more we put our – it's like with oil. I mean, if we want to just keep putting our heads in the sand and not acting on something, the problem only gets worse. It doesn't get any better. It just keeps getting worse as the months roll on. And so it's about time we did comprehensive immigration reform, and I think that the you know, it's a funny thing. I was listening to on the radio today in D.C., and some of the people in Virginia want to pass a law. Some of the Republicans in the Virginia legislature want to pass a law similar to Arizona. I can't believe people are so tone deaf.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. Congressman Elliot Engel of the great state of New York, thank you so much, as always, for your time, sir.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
All right.
I hope you heal quickly.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. We'll see you next time. All right. Did he apologize to me on behalf of New York for breaking me?
No, he did not.
No.
Huh.
No. Could I have your wedding organ, please, for a moment? I just have to say, I'm not going to miss my New York Times because I'm still going to get it when I go back to L.A., but the wedding section, do you guys ever read the wedding section?
No.
Of the New York Times?
I don't get the New York Times. He gets it, but he just doesn't get it. Yeah.
I get it. You don't get it. Okay, fine. My point is, we were going to have Ted Boutros Jr., law partner to Ted Olson, on in just a few minutes to update us on the Prop 8 trial in California.
That's right.
But I'm reading my New York Times, and they include same-sex weddings, which I love, in the wedding.
I've heard that.
The wedding section. And I have in front of me the wedding announcement for Gary Lohman and Brock McCormick.
Brock?
Brock.
Okay.
Brock and Gary got married. Fine-looking gents. William Gary O. Lohman Jr. and Brock Patrick McCormick were married Saturday evening at the Westin Grand Hotel in Washington.
Hmm.
And then I love the wedding section because it gives you little details about how they met and stuff. And I just love this. And it's right in the New York Times wedding section. And because it reminded me of the Prop 8 trial. That I thought, okay, I don't know what people think. If you don't let gay people marry, these guys were never going to marry women. Let me just tell you something.
Oh, no.
I don't know what...
The stereotypes are us.
Mm-hmm. Gary said he would come over to my house and we would play different Broadway soundtracks and sing along. Oh. Mr. McCormick said we both knew all the words to Wicked and that's how we bonded.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah, that's super gay.
That's gay. That is gay.
Their relationship turned romantic at a Super Bowl party.
Super Bowl party?
Mr. McCormick posted in February 2006. He'd invited a group of friends who were not big football fans, and after watching for a while, he and Mr. Lohman turned on show tunes and got up and sang. I love the New York Times wedding announcement.
I know that they only watched the game for the commercials and the halftime show.
Yeah, they should try that in front of Jim Ward while he's watching the World Cup. That would have ended in fisticuffs. Wow.
June is busting out all over. Get out of the way, Sparky.
And Portugal is about to clang, clang, clang off the trolley. Get out of the front of the TV. All right. I just love that story.
Although Jim obviously knows show tunes enough to sing them for that comedy bit.
My first radio job was a radio station that played show tunes.
Oh.
Friends of mine at K-Tide, the rock station, were banging groupies, you know, out the window over State Street. And I had guys visiting me to bring me a cake. Thought you might enjoy a cake. Thank you. Thank you. Very nice of you. That was really... Sweet. Thanks.
All right. 19 minutes after the hour. Right back on the latest on the oil spill and the Prop 8 trial as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Welcome to the party, Barn. May we take your order? It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie. Stephanie.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 24 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere, Sanchez and Montebello. Hola, que tal? Adios mio.
Mamacita y los Smokies del Norte. Muy buenos nachos. Today, I'm actually Dr. Sanchez Bonecracker today. I'm going to offer you some free medical advice here.
Thank you.
You know, at one point I was thrown out of medical school, right?
No, I did not know that.
Well, that was because I was rolling my own Valium cigarettes. So, but I think that your injury is psychosomatic, much so the same way that husbands feel the pregnancy syndrome when their wives are pregnant. We're all suffering the pains that the Gulf is suffering right now. So I think it's related to that. The Gulf is on everyone's minds right now. So you could be taking it and channeling it through your foot. But
sure.
there was something actually about the Gulf. I think that we should all start beating. We should all be getting concerned about the conditions down there. One of my Facebook friends was telling me
we should start to be getting concerned.
Well, on a higher level, because she was telling me over the weekend, she lives in the Tampa area. She was saying that she was smelling that rotten egg smell, the hydrogen sulfide.
Oh, really?
And I was also reading elsewhere that they already have contingency plans in effect for evacuating people down there.
Yep.
And in one other place, I don't know if you know about this, Jim, but the U.S. Army Northern Command, which is basically the military wing of Homeland Security, was also announcing that they're conducting drills in, of all places, the Gulf of Mexico.
My sister's living in that side of Florida right now.
Yeah.
So they're starting to smell it, too.
Yeah. So I think we should all collectively, start praying for no hurricanes to hit the Gulf.
I think it may have already started. I was reading a report about crops getting these mysterious, deadly spots on them. And it may be from contaminated rain from the Gulf. I mean, they have no other explanation for it. But
Sue in Rockville, Maryland, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hi, Sue.
Hi. I hope you feel better. I really worry about you.
Yeah, we all do.
should. I'm clearly need adult supervision at all times.
Apropos of that married couple, I just wanted to say that my son is a musical theater guy, but he's straight. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But he was on a bus and truck tour for several months with a cast, or, going around the country performing, right around the time of the Oscars and the NCAAs. And so, he's a Tar Heel guy, he's a sports guy. So he desperately tried to get up a pool for the NCAAs. He could not get anyone interested. No one would buy in. No one would do anything. Then it was like, oh boy, let's have an Oscar pool. And all the guys are like Oscars and musicals. And he called me. He said, I may be on the wrong tour.
Gayest musical ever. Chuck and Di at the what was it called? The tabloid musical.
I remember.
Catastrophe. Yeah.
And yes.
So it doesn't rub off. You'll be happy.
Okay.
Exactly. All right. By the by, speaking of court cases let me have my fine American music here. You know who's doing the Lord's work? Is that Senator Al Franken?
Yes. Quietly, I might add.
Republican senators and conservative jurists found themselves on the defensive after Senator Al Franken blasted conservative activism on the federal courts. It's about time someone mentioned that. They only talk about activism when they think it's something they don't like. Franken, in a major speech before the American Constitution Society, sought to set the stage for the summer confirmation battle over Elena Kagan, joining the Supreme Court. Originalism isn't a pillar of our constitutional history. It's a talking point, Franken said, taking a jab at Chief Justice John Roberts for his famous comparison between judges and baseball umpires during his confirmation hearings. How ridiculous, Franken said. Judges are nothing like umpires. He's calling him out.
Good.
Good.
Well, when
good for him.
Republicans talk about judicial activism, they really mean upholding established law, Roe v. Wade.
Exactly. And then, when they want a Bush-appointed president, they're looking for some good judicial activists, aren't they? All right, here's that butthole by VP Chairman Svanberg.
And that's in the Congress they try to claim. But this is, of course, something that we will look very, very carefully into in the investigations. But that has not been the intention.
He's talking about cutting corners. And yes. Congress is claiming that, but there's no evidence of it all.
No, and furthermore, flirty, flirty, smirk, smirk, flirty, flirty.
He is the Swedish chef. Oh, my God.
All right.
The small people will not appreciate what we are doing for them, but as you know, flirty, flirty, smirky, flirty, flirty, smirk,
smirk, smirk.
Farfenugan. Okay.
That's German. That is German,
yeah,
Stephanie.
Okay, I don't know.
Oh, bless your heart.
Representative Chris Van Hollen, whom we know.
We're going district by district to talk about this issue and holding Republican members and their candidates accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Many of whom feel exactly the same as Joe Barton.
Mm-hmm.
29 minutes after the hour, we will be back with Ted Boutros Jr., law partner of Ted Olson in the Prop 8 trial, as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
They want to surprise him.
Can't you surprise him in some other way? For example, I'm sure he'd be delightfully taken aback if you cleaned your apartment.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to It, 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Ted Boutros Jr. is Ted Olson's law partner, we should point out. A partner in law. Prop 8 trial out in California. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Stephanie. How
thanks
are you?
So much for good. Thanks so much for checking back in with us. Let's first update us on where we're at. The trial, you wrapped up closing arguments, correct?
That's right. Last week we had an all-day session on Wednesday on closing arguments, and now the case is in the hands of the judge, and we're awaiting a decision from Chief Judge Walker in San Francisco.
And when is that expected, Ted?
There are no deadlines for the court. I would think we'd probably get something from the judge this summer, but he could do it sooner than that or later than that, however long it takes him to look at the arguments and make a decision.
Wow. So I'm hearing that Ted Olson was on a conference call where he said he believes that you guys are going to win, but obviously that, you know, he thinks whoever loses is going to go to the Supreme Court, correct?
We feel very strongly about our case, and Ted Olson has said that. We felt that our side put on experts from around the world that were compelling. The other side really, and our plaintiffs were just overpowering in their testimony. The other side really put on no case. They put on two witnesses, and we thought that we were able to really take them apart on cross-examination. David Boies did just a fantastic job, so we feel very good about where we are at this point in the case.
I heard you. I don't know if you saw Maureen Dowd's piece yesterday, but she talked about some. I mean, it sounds like it went very well for you. She writes, among other things, she said a defense witness, David Blankenhorn, the president of the Institute for American Values, a group that studies marriage and families, inexplicably ended up helping the plaintiffs when he said that heterosexual couples have been busy deinstitutionalizing the institution of marriage and that adoptive parents are as good as natural parents. He also said that we will be more American on the day that we permit same-sex marriage and give gays human dignity. Did that shock you?
It was devastating when it happened in trial, and the judge allowed us to play clips, video clips, from the trial back in January during the closing argument. So Ted Olson played those three clips and more. When Mr. Blankenhorn said we would be more American the day we recognize same-sex marriage than we were the day before, I thought that was a pivotal big moment in the trial. That's their main witness.
Well, I was going to say it is a really great line, and to think it came from someone that was supposed to be helping the other side. Amazing. Now, Maureen Dowd goes on to say at one point, Cooper, he's the other judge, right?
He's the lawyer for the defendants, yes.
Yeah. At one point, Cooper was pressed by the judge, who said, I don't mean to be flip, but went on to ask the lawyer, what testimony in the case supports the proposition that the object of marriage is procreation? Cooper said he didn't need evidence of that point, surprising the judge, and argued that even if that was wrong, Judge Walker should uphold the law because the people of California had voted for the same-sex marriage ban. Walker seems bemused, Maureen Dowd writes, bemused as he did through much of Cooper's stumbling close, but the state doesn't withhold the right to marriage to people who are unable to produce children of their own, the judge said. Are you suggesting the state should? Cooper said no, failing to offer any compelling argument for discriminating against same-sex couples.
That was really, you know, again, we thought very telling, and that the argument of the supporters of Proposition 8 was that they really didn't know for what would happen if same-sex marriage was allowed, that they didn't have any evidence, and that they didn't need any evidence, and I think that's contrary to the legal standards, but it was also one of the great things about having a trial, that putting it on with witnesses and evidence, they had no evidence, and that, you know, we think really serves the cause of marriage equality and puts us in a very strong position in this case.
Maureen Dowd closes by saying Olson was at the top of his game as he concluded the case and got a standing ovation from those watching the proceedings on screen in the overflow room. And I submit at the end of the day, he said, I don't know and I don't have to put up any evidence. With all due respect to Mr. Cooper, does not cut it. It does not cut it when you're taking away the constitutional rights, basic human rights, and human decency from a large group of individuals. I mean, that is a great summation, right?
He really captured it, and in his rebuttal, he took apart the other side's arguments one by one, and I think really did capture what our case is all about, equality, treating people fairly, giving everyone the same rights in this country. And on the other side of the equation, it's, I don't know, we don't have to put on any evidence, and that doesn't cut it in our system.
And that, well, and it's arrogant, isn't it, Ted? I mean, it really is, or excuse me, I'm sorry, Ted, it just seems to me that that's all they got. They just came with, well, the people voted for bigotry, so there.
I was very surprised because they had been so vehement during the campaign that they had all these reasons. Once they got into court and once they knew that their witnesses would have to be cross-examined and have to explain themselves, they decided that their best answer was, we don't have to have any evidence. But in our civil rights trials throughout history, Brown versus Board of Education, up until the present day, there have been trials where people have to put on evidence to prove why they think a discriminatory law is appropriate, and they just didn't have any.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Ted Olson said that recently. We hope that we'll not be far away from a day when everyone understands the same now as they do about interracial marriages, that it's inconceivable. We can't prevent people from having that relationship by erecting legal barriers to it. You know, and I think, you know, sort of paraphrasing that, we will be more American line, he said, we will not be complete as a nation dedicated to the proposition that all men and women are created equal until we start treating our gay and lesbian colleagues as equal. I mean, that's really just the basis of this whole thing.
It really is. The marriage is a basic civil right. Equality is a basic aspect of our Constitution. When you look at the gay marriage ban in California and other states, it's one of the few areas where we actually have governments explicitly discriminating against people because of who they are and because of their status. And we really feel strongly this is unconstitutional. And the Supreme Court's decision in Loving versus Virginia, which struck down bans on interracial marriage and other cases, you take those cases to their logical and rational conclusion, and these laws, this law in California and others like them, should go down too.
Well, you know, and I also think I was reading what else Ted Olson had to say in this conference call, and a friend of mine, Rob Reiner, you know, and his wife Michelle, Olson calls heroes. I didn't even realize that they put together and financed the American Foundation for Equal Rights, including the legal team led by Olson and Boies, to challenge the constitutionality of Prop 8. I mean, you know, that's the thing, I think, in any civil rights battle. It's people, I mean, obviously who are not gay, but are standing up, you know, for everybody's rights, that I think is really, they really are heroes.
You are absolutely right. Rob and Michelle Reiner and Chad Griffin, who is a longtime colleague of them and works with them, and Bruce Cohen, a film producer, Lance Black, others who, you know, they stepped up and said, we think this is wrong. We need to put together an effort. And it really, it makes you feel good that people are looking for ways to make our country better and to make equality something that applies to everyone. So you're absolutely right.
Well, I'm saying that for two reasons. One, I love Rob Reiner, and two, I'm trying to get invited back to his house because I've never been invited back once I spilled wine on Christine Lottie or, I don't know, something. Last party I was there.
I'll put in a good word for you.
Thank you. Please. And then he was on the Hillary side, and, you know, we need to kiss and make up. but, you know, it was interesting. I was joking earlier, Ted, but, you know, I was reading Maureen Dowd's column in the New York Times this weekend, and then I read the wedding section, and they, you know, they include same-sex weddings in there, and it was hilarious as these two guys that met and bonded over singing show tunes, over singing all the songs to Wicked. And I said, those two guys are never going to marry women, even if you disallow Came here, like, what do people think? Like, if you say this, you know, we're not going to do this, that there's not going to be gay people anymore? I mean, it really is, you know, the way you guys, I think, phrased it so brilliantly, is just giving everybody the same rights, period.
And we kept arguing, why do you want to stop people who simply want to get married and have a happy family life and raise children and enjoy life and be productive members of society? Why would you want to stop them, and what harm will it do to anyone else? And there was no evidence, no response from the other side. So it's. I think you're absolutely right. When you read those stories of people who are in love and want to live happy lives, how can you and why would you say no?
Right. Well, and I think that's why, you know, Ted Olson being involved in this was so pivotal, because, you know, his sort of, you know, conservative case for gay marriage is really compelling and consistent when you think about it.
He really is able to capture what the essence of this argument. And then when you put him together with David Boies, I mean, as a lawyer and as a citizen, seeing those two put this case on and lay it out, it's really been a great thing, I think, for the case and for the cause for marriage equality.
How do you think the George Wrecker story breaking in the midst of this affected things or not? I mean, it, if there could be a bigger right-wing hypocrite, you know, but as I was saying, you know, there's always the jokes. This is the guy, of course, caught in the rent boy scandal. But I mean, this guy has put a lot of his life and energy into hurting gay people and gay rights, hasn't he?
It was very interesting development, and it goes back to this point of why devote your time towards trying to take away the rights from other people. And when you do have a story that does go to the hypocrisy of it, I think it drives home the point. Mr. Blankenhorn, one of the people, the expert we were talking about, one of the articles he cited as material he had relied on in our case was an article by Mr. Wreckers. And you say, you know, let's devote your time to something else. If people want to live happily and with freedom and equality, is that really what you should be devoting your time to trying to stop?
Yeah. Well, it was based on his quote-unquote research, which apparently involves having nearly naked men carry your luggage and massage you. Yeah, anyway, but no, I mean, that I thought was, in some ways, couldn't have been more perfect timing for your case, because this is a guy that's testified all over the country, right, in gay adoption cases, and in this, like you say, he was certainly cited in the gay marriage trial.
That's correct, and it really goes back to the fact that there is no research, there is no data, there's nothing. The judge asked Mr. Cooper, all these articles you're citing, all these studies you're citing, you couldn't get one witness to come into court and testify to these things, and that's what happened. There really isn't any body of literature, scientific literature, or anything that supports the other side that wants to stop people who of the same gender from getting married, and I think that drives home that point.
Yep. Well, you know what, Ted, I feel it. I think we're almost there. So, you know, let's just keep on fighting the good fight. And thank you so much for checking in with us. I hope you will again. So.
I would love to. Thanks again for having me.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Okay,
Ted
bye.
Boutros Jr.
Hooray.
Yes. 45, and thank
Boutros?
You for making...
Golly.
I was just going to thank you for not making that joke, and you see?
And we did it. We had to.
45
minutes.
It
was there for the taking.
He's laying there like a soccer ball, ready to be kicked into the goal.
That's right.
Seven times by Portugal
Jim
this morning
just,
against North Korea.
He's on his World Cup buzz. Don't mm-hmm. harsh it. 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Do you like it?
It's brilliant.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You know, baby, I was thumbing through the dictionary, trying to find words to describe you. I found one. You know what it is? It's...
Stephanie Miller.
You're not required to play our gayest bump just because we checked in on the Pop 8 Prop.
Well, I thought it was an FCC regulation.
51 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. Little celebrity stack, huh? Bike stolen from Jenna Bush's home.
What?
Who has a lot of free time and really likes bikes?
All right, I did it.
I want to get on a bicycle again with my baseball cards and the spokes. Sounds like a machine gun. It's like me flying my F-102 again. Shooting down all them North Vietnamese fighters. Oh, it's right. I never left Texas. Must have been a dream. It was all a dream. And you were there, Dick. And you too, Don and Connie.
Any opportunity to bring back the hits. You know how
that's
it is.
Right.
Playing the hits. Playing the Freebirds. Warren Beatty's daughter wants to have a sex change.
Oh, oh no.
Come on. You're stealing Chaz's act. Warren Beatty and Annette Bening's daughter, Kathleen, wants to undergo a sex change surgery. She's 18. She is wants to have the surgery now that she's an adult.
And we fully support her decision.
Yes, she maybe wants to be as big a womanizer as her father. Good for her. We support her here on the Stephanie Miller Show. Oh,
oh
I mean...
Boy. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I kind of... Well, it depends on how far into the transition she is, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
MTV to go easy on Guidos in the New Jersey Shore?
Well, what fun is that?
What's left if you take the Guido-ness out of the Jersey Shore? The head of an Italian-American group says the producers of MTV's Jersey Shore reality show plan to go easier on Italian references in the shows.
They should make fun of Mennonites and Amish, all those people who live on the Jersey Shore.
Yeah, the oddest line in that story, Chris, it said, Snooki said her fans. I'm like, what? Snooki has fans? Yeah, you're
apparently
a fan of Snooki.
And every single one of them has syphilis.
You don't know that for sure.
I did not say that.
The Stephanie Miller Show apologizes to the syphilitic fans of Snooki. We don't know for sure. Could be chlamydia. All right. The superficial the superficial reporting. Dina Lohan called the cops because Carvel wouldn't give her free ice cream.
What? Oh, my God. What's this world coming to?
Oh, boy. Dina Lohan apparently called the cops this week. Wait for it. Carvel refused to give her free ice cream just for being Lindsay's mom. As part of Carvel's 75th anniversary celebration last year, Carvel writes, we issued 75 black cards to celebrities. These cards were issued in the celebrity's name and required the cardholder to be present at the time of use. Unfortunately, the Lohan family has been abusing the card. While the card was issued in Lindsay's name only, her extended family has repeatedly used the card without her present. After more than 6 months of numerous and large orders for ice cream, we finally had to cut off the card and take it back. Dina Lohan reacted badly and called the police to have her card returned.
Oh, my
called
God.
Called the police? Yeah, they love that.
God.
All right.
Just take because she couldn't get her cookie puss.
I beg your pardon?
Excuse me?
It's an ice cream cake that Carvel offers.
Ah, I thought it was a reference to my commando.
I thought you were talking about one of those pictures of Lindsay getting out of a limo. Okay. Oh, boy. Okay, Scary Spice, Jim, I don't know, we'll have to ask you how your married life is. She told George Lopez her fitness secret is she said, you fancy a shag. You have sex 5 times a day with your husband.
Wow.
Today was a busy day, so it was just 3.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
Yikes.
Oh,
that is, she is a Scary Spice.
Yeah, she
Yikes.
Is scary.
Yeah, she fancies a shag.
How many times a day does Mrs.
Constantly.
Ward demand marital relations? Again? All right. Representative Michelle Bachmann, the bat crazy congresswoman from Minnesota on the BP.
We don't think it's a good idea for the federal government to see private industry as essentially a piggy bank for the federal government.
But
yeah,
it was BP's idea.
Just using it for Siggy money. That's what he's
It was BP's idea to set up an escrow account.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, God.
What was I going to say? The oil industry has deep pockets. They have a long history of supporting Republicans, said one political consultant. Like any kind of addiction, it's a terribly difficult thing to break. Because like I was saying, Barton's not the only one defending them. You have the Michelle Bachmann. It's really a theme at this point. Oh, Barton, by the way, a hair away, apparently, from being ousted.
I've heard that.
I think, by the way, there's a behind-the-scenes story, Chris, about the, I think we were right last week. There was crying and throwing of things in Boner's office when he heard about this. It was the crying and the throwing of things and the yelling. From
the top of our list.
I think the top of our list.
And he said, basically, hell no, you can't.
And security of the American people. That's at the top of our list.
Hell no, you can't.
They were a hair away from booting Barton outright, according to a Republican aide. In the 24 hours since he has retracted his apology to BP, the heat on him has only increased in some Republican corners.
Really? I wouldn't think the GOP would look upon this as an, you know, impeachable offense for a... That just seems weird to me that they would kick him out just for saying
because
that.
It's what they all believe, so it's just...
Exactly.
Say it out loud, you idiot.
He's the sacrificial lamb.
All right. Kevin Costner, before we go on, is a sucky machine.
This machine, it was designed for that. To fight for you. It was designed to give us a fighting chance to fight back the oil before it got us by the throat. When you're in a fight, anybody knows you go to confront it. Right where it is. You don't wait for it to come to your door. You don't allow it to reach your family, your community. That's what this machine was intended for.
By the way, this just in, Governor Jan Brewer has asked for Kevin Costner's machine to suck the immigrants out of her state. What? Hillary Clinton on the lawsuit.
President Obama has spoken out against... the law, because he thinks that the federal government should be determining immigration policy. Mm-hmm. And the Justice Department, under his direction, will be bringing a lawsuit against the act.
Jan Brewer wasn't too happy about that.
All right, that's it for me. I'm going to hobble over to the podiatrist on my broken foot. John Fugelsang will be in for me tomorrow. And I will see you back here Wednesday on The Stephanie Miller Show.